All right, it's the Fan pregame. Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. We got a trifecta of guests this evening, from baseball to horse racing to golf. We're going to cover it all, starting with Jesse Rogers from ESPN to talk about a new proposed rule change that I don't know how many people will like.
It's a brat summer, at least I'm told. But it's a brat summer.
You
today.
Almost told me that you knew day. What that meant.
I have no idea. But Jeff Bratt, Woodbine host and handicapper, will join us at 6:30 as one of those guests to tee up the King's Plate, which is this weekend. And it's very, very exciting. Looking forward to that.
Ryan Paul, to wrap things up, today's newly appointed tournament director for the RBC Canadian Open. It's runs in the family. We'll explain that a little later, but we'll chat about RBC Canadian Open, obviously, potentially its move to a new week and a lot more with him. But we got a jam-packed 50 minutes. Let's go.
Lots of reasons to have Jesse Rogers on in a moment, but one of those reasons is an article he wrote in ESPN today with another potential change to Major League Baseball. Of course, no league has really changed their stripes more than Major League Baseball recently with the adaptation of the pitch clock, which has been really, really positive. But he suggested that there is a premium on wanting to see the starters go longer in games. And is there a way to make it a minimum for starters to go six innings? We'll ask him about that. But it got us thinking, a change to a sport. If we could make a change to any sport, all sport, what change would you make?
Okay, and we'll open our text line up 590-590, standard data rates apply, and then also you can tweet us or whatever. I got a couple. The first thing that came to mind, and maybe it's because we've had the Leafs on our mind, was like no hard cap in the NHL. Like none of that. Let people just get paid whatever they want. That's a little bit less realistic, but I would like to see you being able to kick a puck in the net. Like just let it happen. If it's a puck.
That's your number one. You're God. You can change anything you want to see.
I have a bunch.
Go in the net. Okay.
Okay, that's one of them. Like the kicking motion, whether it's a kicking motion or not, just if it goes in, it goes in. Okay, so I'll let you go then.
I'm kind of with you on the cap thing, but it's more of just embracing exceptional status across all sports, where those who are different can get treated differently. So if like in every team, on every team in every league, they had that player, or they had the franchise tag that actually works in favor of the players and not a tool for general managers in the NFL to keep players that deserve to earn more money, but a real franchise tag where you are the franchise and you can be rewarded with all the riches in the world if the team so chooses. I think that would be very positive and would allow us to stop the blame game where Patrick Mahomes is like lauded because he takes less money, but should he have to? Not really. Probably shouldn't have to take less money when he's leading a dynasty, but we villainize players that take too much. So if you could just separate them from all of that and let us celebrate them to the full extent, I think that would be a positive change in sport.
Okay. Another one. The NBA needs to limit how many timeouts you can take in the final 2 minutes of a game, because the final 2 minutes of a game,
I really like that
one. Final 2 minutes of a game take 30 minutes and there's no flow and it's just so excruciating to watch. So you'd have to be smarter about when you use your timeouts, how many you can use. It'd be way more enjoyable for fans to watch, and you have to be smarter and strategy wise for the NBA. And I mean, they kind of did something similar with the pitch clock, at least, right? Like that sped up the flow of baseball, which was, it used to be like a 3.5 hour sport. Now it's two and a bit, and you just feel like you enjoy the game better. Whereas you come to the end of an NBA game and you're just like, okay, well, I'm going to be here for about 45 more minutes to watch them, you know, play 60 seconds of basketball.
It's funny because fans think that way for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the challenges for the NBA, not a challenge, but it's opposite compared to Major League Baseball, where you're just on the air forever, right? Like it's long, it's drawn out, it's 162 games. Some games are 4 hours longer or were. I think with the NBA, like, they want to be on televisions more because the game does move quicker. So I wouldn't expect them to do that, although I'm definitely with you. It is fluid, though, the way I think about these things. Like, in the summer, watching the Euro, I was like, can we just never do VAR again? Can we, like, if I could choose anything 2 months ago, it would be like, just eliminate VAR. I never want to see it again. Can we just stop with it totally? That would be my change. But it comes up when a new sport comes up, and I think I'll change, and I'll be in the middle of June watching the NBA Finals and be like, yes, can we stop with the timeout? So it's all dependent on the calendar, but it would be nice to see VAR scrap too, at least for me.
Okay, so we have a bunch coming in the text line at 590-590. We'll try to circulate those after our first guest in between the break of our next couple guests. But let's kick things off with Jesse Rogers, MLB insider for ESPN, joining us. Jesse, thanks so much for jumping on. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be with you guys.
You have sparked a great dialogue amongst everybody about the proposed rule changes. So let's start there. Obviously, you had an article up about the league discussing the idea of a minimum innings rule for pitchers. So walk us through what this would potentially be and why it would be interesting.
Yeah, let's start with the fact that they're just kicking this idea around. Nothing's imminent. And as I wrote in the article, probably the most important part of this is if they did institute a minimum innings requirement for starting pitchers, they would give teams advance notice, meaning like maybe even 3 years. Mm. So the premise of my article was basically asking executives and a few players, if the league said starting in 2028, starters would be required to go at least 6 innings, how would you prepare for it? Now, before everybody goes crazy, there are exceptions or carve-outs, as league officials put it. And those carve-outs are huge. They're really the basis of the rule in the sense that, yes, the initial requirement is 6 innings by every starter. But if you reach a certain amount of pitches, let's say 100, before you get to 6 innings, you can be pulled. Mm. If you give up, let's say, 4 or more runs, you can be pulled. If you get hurt, obviously you can be pulled. Now, you may have to miss some time so teams aren't trying to manipulate, you know, fake injuries and stuff like that. So there are major carve-outs. The point of this rule is threefold. It's to return the starting pitcher to some prominence. We eliminate openers. Mm-hmm. We eliminate the starting pitcher that just is going to go hard for 4 innings and then gets pulled at 80 pitches, even though he's going well, because either analytics says it or, you know, there's some warning signs because he's throwing max effort. They want to get pitchers back to navigating 6 innings, maybe holding something back, maybe putting an emphasis on command over stuff, over velocity, and this would take several years. So it's all these things combined, and then they also hope if a pitcher does face an order a third time that maybe some increase in scoring will happen because hitters are getting used to seeing that pitcher because scoring is still down despite a little bit better here in the second half this season. So it really knocks out several different areas of baseball. And I think the biggest thing is just the analytics gets tossed out when a manager is about to pull his pitcher because that third time through the order is coming up. That won't happen if the pitcher's going well.
So, yeah, there's a lot there. When I first read it, I was like, okay, so why the premium on the starter? Why do we want to get back to celebrating the starter? But it might not be that. It might be, hey, let's get the starter in danger and see how that impacts the game. But if we're talking about what baseball fans want, I mean, I guess the average baseball fan, we want to see the long ball, baby. We want to see more home runs. But maybe it's not. Maybe you will get that by leaving starters in longer, and then we can celebrate the great starters that can navigate the lineup 3 times potentially and go deeper in games.
Yeah, there's all these little layers to it, and then you hit on a couple right there. They hope that it would reduce injuries because training habits would change. I even write in the article that, you know, maybe you incentivize it a little bit more. If a team reaches 900 innings from its starting staff, it gets an extra draft pick. I mean, you can go as dramatic as you want. And certainly when I talk to pitchers, and I didn't really include this too much in the story, is like if you start paying for innings, we will we will start training to pitch more innings, you know, because now it's about velocity. So there are all these layers to it. And look, I think seeing two great starting pitchers take the mound to start a game is every fan's desire, whether they're buying a ticket, especially if they're buying a ticket or tuning in on TV. I mean, the occasional bullpen game, I guess, isn't the worst thing in the world, but I'd rather have 2 good starters every time I buy a ticket. And this would at least eliminate openers and train starters to be guys that can go 6 innings every 5 days.
So for starters now, the worry might be, you know, 3 times through the order, but I think every starter in Major League Baseball concerned about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. every time they see Vladdy right now, the conversation has shifted many times around Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Throughout his young career. How has this stretch changed the conversation for you around him and his future?
Well, it hasn't changed it too much. It's just kind of brought me back to what he was a couple of years ago, a superstar, right? When he was battling Ohtani, when he, if I'm not mistaken, he won All-Star Game MVP, right? Or Home Run Derby, one of those.
Home
right?
run, yeah.
And he was, yeah, he was the talk of baseball, out, you know, right after Ohtani in the American League. He kind of disappeared a little bit there, but we know he's got it in him, right? Once you establish yourself as a 900 or 1,000 OPS kind of guy, yeah, you can have a down season, but we know it's there to be had again. You could tap into it. So that's what I think of him. Now, are the Blue Jays going to sign him long term? That you guys would know that answer better than I would, but I would absolutely see teams lining up to trade for him. I you know, they're playing the Cubs this weekend. The Cubs would certainly be one of them. I know the Cubs have kicked the tires on Vlad. I'm sure a lot of teams have as Toronto tries to figure out what its future is. But Vlad can be and is at times a game changer, using the Cubs as an example. They don't have someone like that because it's not just the numbers he can put up. It's the impact on players around him. And there's not too many guys that can do that. And not many guys on each team, like the Phillies and the Dodgers and the Yankees, have multiple guys that can do that. That's why they're so good. The Blue Jays kind of have just him, basically. You know, at different times, guys have jumped up and had good years around him. But you want to get those kind of guys in your lineup, and you want multiple of those guys. So it's up to the Blue Jays. If they're going to sign him, great. If not, there's going to be a whole host of teams lining up to trade for Vlad Guerrero.
I think this offseason is fascinating, too, because the Blue Jays say they want to compete in 2025. And as you mentioned, there's not a lot of pieces around Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at this moment. So let's talk about maybe the free agency market that we'd be exploring next year. Like, how do the Blue Jays present themselves as top players in that? Obviously, they've been in the top part of payroll for a long time. They want to build around, let's say, a Vladdy. How competitive can they be? Is there someone that you'd like to see in a Blue Jays uniform come next spring?
Well, if you've heard me at all on Toronto media over the last couple of years, you'll know my answer. Find me the best available left-handed hitter and go get him. And look for a moment there that they were on their way to doing that with Shohei Ohtani. But mysteriously, I'm sure to you guys and everybody, after they missed out on him, they really didn't double down elsewhere for a left-handed bat. And they kind of just brought everybody back. I've said this before, and trust me, I've gotten a lot of things wrong. I picked the Twins to upset them last year. Toronto was a perfect regular season team the last couple of years, but not a postseason team, because in the postseason, you need dangerous left-handed hitters because there are so many good righties, and teams continue to go back to those righties in the playoffs. You need to offset those right-handers with some slug from the left side. Toronto didn't have that. Same problem. Now, they seemingly have more problems this year than the last couple regular seasons. But I do think there's still some good pitching there. And, you know, maybe some guys are having, you know, not so quite the good years they had last year, like Gausman. So I don't know if they can compete in the AL East. I don't think they're this bad, but they've got to get balance in the lineup. That has not changed. They might be a little bit better. They're kind of league average in OPS this year. And they're sort of around league average against right-handed pitching. So they're actually a little bit better. But that can only mask the problem. You've got to have a couple lefties, good lefties, to really balance your lineup out and change the thinking of the opposing staff and manager. The Blue Jays haven't had that in years.
On the phone with MLB insider for ESPN, Jesse Rogers. So what does the market look like this offseason because of the Blue Jays? And they've been telling everyone plans to compete in 2025. Let's say, and they don't even need the biggest bag of cash, but let's say they have a real sizable bag of cash this offseason and they intend to use it. Like, can you go out there and fix this group, assuming Vlad stays, assuming Bo stays, assuming that they have the skeleton still in place? Can you supplement it just with what's there this offseason?
Yeah, it's probably more via trade than free agency. There's not a ton of good left-handed hitters if we're using that as our kind of litmus thing. You know, it's funny. I thought they should have gone after Cody Bellinger last year. Let's bring it back to Cubs and Blue Jays this weekend. I thought they should have gone after Cody Bellinger last year. Now, he hasn't had the best power season, but again, we kind of know it's in him. Maybe he's not that MVP caliber player, but I do think he could help balance the lineup out. So the Cubs absolutely would trade Cody Bellinger. Now, that will cost you probably more than you want. It's $27.5 million the next couple years. Maybe the Cubs would pick up some of it because he has not had a great power season. Really good against left-handed pitching. Really good singles hitter. Just hasn't had a lot of power. But Wrigley Field for lefties can really hurt you in that slug department. So maybe you trade for a guy like Cody Bellinger and you pay more than you want in terms of the salary. Maybe you won't have to pay as much in terms of the prospects or the assets you return back if you're picking up more salary. So that's a guy. You know, is Kyle Tucker long-term for the Astros? He hasn't signed up. I'm talking about big, major trades that the Blue Jays should attempt to pull off to try to find that balance in the lineup. Even if it is a righty to go along with Bichette and Guerrero and everything, like, you know, you have to get a little bit deeper in that lineup, I think, from the left side. But beggars can't be choosers. So lengthen it out as much as you can. And so that's what I'm thinking. Go out and find a guy or two that isn't going to re-sign with this team, that is a little bit expendable, that might be expensive, but you're willing to pay for it because you're trying to compete next year.
Blue Jays and Cubs, as you mentioned, Jesse, starting a three-game set tomorrow, the latter two games on Sportsnet this weekend. Tell us a bit about the Cubs. How disappointing is it that they sit six games out of a wild card at this point of the summer?
Yeah, pretty disappointing. They should have a better record, at least if you base it on what's on paper, what they did last year, what they added, rookie of the year candidate, Shota Imanaga, another rookie of the year candidate at first base, Michael Busch, kind of came out of nowhere in a trade from L.A. And then add the fact that they hired Craig Counsell, known as one of the better managers. You got to have the horses, though, of course, but you just figured, look, if they won 83 last year and you tie up some loose ends, you add here, you add there, they're going to at least repeat the season they had. And I don't know if 83 would get them in, but at least would get them in the mix. They're not on that pace. They've been under 500 for months and months. And it's been disappointing. A little bit of everything's gone wrong as happens when you're a few games under 500. But both the bullpen and their offense really has hurt them going back the last few months. The offense and the bullpen have both been better lately, but it might be too little too late with all those teams ahead of them. It's hard to put your finger on why it happened. Sometimes progress isn't linear. Like you win 83, you're supposed to win 88. That doesn't happen. You guys probably know that there in Toronto. So they're probably a little bit better team than they've showed. And certainly run differential wise, they should be 500 or better. But it's been disappointing for sure.
Last one for you, Jesse. I got to ask you about baseball's cockroach, which is the Houston Astros. Eight in a row. This team is about to embark on a three-game set on the south side with the Chicago White Sox. So a couple more wins could be on the table there as they try to extend this streak. How is it possible that a team that seems to, you know, have some talent just erode from that lineup year by year and still remain immensely talented, clearly, how do they just keep doing this? Like, what is it about the Astros that have them in a position where they're leading the division again? They look like a terror to play in the playoffs when they roll around, and they could just go to another American League Championship Series. Hell, maybe they win another World Series. What is it about the Astros?
Yeah, I mean, look, that core has been in place for a while, and I know we like to use storylines and things like, you know, great leadership and all that, but there's some truth to it. They just know how to win. They know how to fix a bad season or a bad stretch. They know how to come out of it. Like, they've just experienced everything, including a scandal. Like, since then, they've had a chip on their shoulder. Like, they just checked every box off over the years. And so, like, Seattle's a great example. I picked Seattle to win the division. I picked Seattle to go to the World Series. I've completely changed my mind because they don't have that intangible that Houston has. Now, on top of it, as we come full circle with this conversation, Houston has incredible balance and depth. And so if one guy's out, they can pick up the pieces, lefty, righty. And when they're all in there together, it's really good. But there is something to be said about the experience of going through everything they've gone through, good and bad, and knowing how to bring yourself out of a slump and a bad year, whatever the case may be. A team like Seattle gets punched in the mouth and they just haven't reacted as well. I'm just using them as an example because my pick is going down in tune. So I hate to be cliche about it. They just know how to do it. And there's a lot of heart and soul there. You have to give them credit.
Well, you're making Justin happy because he picked them as winners of, I don't even know if it was the World Series or
like
to go
Jesse
to.
Did, I had to adjust. Yes. But like when you see them doing it over again, I mean, history tends to repeat itself. And when they show you something and they've shown you something, I get on board, right?
There you go. That's it.
For sure.
Well, Jesse, we appreciate your time today. Great article up on ESPN. And we'll direct everyone to read it. And a big weekend for the Blue Jays and the Cubs. And we appreciate your time tonight. Have a good one.
You got it. Enjoy the weekend series. Take care.
Thanks so much. Jesse Rogers, MLB insider for ESPN, based in Chicago, doing Cubs and White Sox. Okay, so we asked you on the text line, and you have delivered. There are a bunch of suggestions for rules. This is inspired by Jesse sharing the proposed rule that we just mentioned with him about a potential six-inning, I guess, minimum innings pitch for starting pitchers.
Obviously, which seems crazy.
It wouldn't start right away. Yeah, no, I think it's crazy. But whatever. It wouldn't start right away. Obviously, they give you time, just kind of like with the pitch clock and maybe robot arms one day. Like, they got to work it in. But
they got to get to it fast enough that Chris Bassett can show his value being
true.
A six-inning guy.
He'll make a lot of money. Okay, so I'm going to try to go through as many as we can here before we take a break. But first one was Tony from Woodbridge, and you can send it your name and location too, and $5.90, $5.90 standard rates do apply. Okay, no anthems before games. Tony from Woodbridge.
Ooh.
You don't like that one?
I'll just... Okay. I'm okay either way.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
All right, just wondering. Okay, so here's one. Caitlin from Toronto. Not allowing soccer to pass back to defense when the ball is crossed over half. Treat it like basketball with no over and back. Keeps the speed and pressure in the game.
Yeah, I don't know how it would... I mean, some of the, not all build-up play is straightforward. Like, sometimes playing it back creates something magical. So I don't know if I'm there on that.
We've got a couple for soccer. Someone says stop time for soccer. One says in Major League Soccer that once the ball is across center, there's no such thing as an offside, similar to the hockey setup with the design. So it's more just inward play.
Yeah.
Bob from Welland, thanks for saying your name. In baseball, have a maximum of 7 pitches per batter. 4 walks. He walks. 4 strikes, foul or miss, he's out. Pitcher and batter are equal. No more advantage to the batter. Starting pitchers would go longer and games would be faster.
Yeah, but then we can't laud a great at-bat where they foul off
That's
a million
true.
Pitches and make a pitcher work.
That's true. Okay, Barry from Toronto. This is a good one, and I think we'll probably get a couple more of these. How about just making the cap in hockey fair? The cap should be set to the after-tax amount. I want to stop Canadian teams from being penalized because we do give our citizens health care, i.e. look at the last winners of the cup. Thank you, Barry from Toronto.
I mean, yeah, I'd definitely be okay with that. But it's like, even if you fix that, then you'll have, Canadians making American money and spending that money in Canada, and that seems like a huge advantage. Feels like you're never going to find the solution there.
Okay, Daryl in Victoria, BC. My change, MLB needs an automated strike zone, which umpires are too frequently making wrong calls, which negatively impact games.
I'm poo-pooing all these, but I hate the idea of robot umps.
Let's find one that Justin likes.
Do you like robot umps? I absolutely hate the idea of robot umps.
I see the pros and cons of it. I love, like, we can all come together and argue about it, an ump that makes the wrong call, but also if it's a strike, it should be a strike.
I think it's a skill to learn the ump.
No, why would you want to be an umpire at this point?
To play off the ump's tendencies.
No. Okay.
He's calling that, so take advantage.
Let's see. Maybe we'll find one that Justin likes. Stop making professional sports contracts and wages public knowledge.
It might be a utopia if we had that.
We just never knew. Who knows how much Mitch Marner's
making?
But then
the player would just tell us eventually, wouldn't they?
Maybe not. Paul from Burlington. In soccer, if a player is injured, it has to be attended to by the trainer. They need to come off the field for 5 minutes. Love that.
Like a little penalty?
Yeah. They need World Cup soccer and Olympic soccer should tie and end games and end tie games differently. 10, 15 minutes of 5-on-5 play to determine the winner. If it's a tie, go to penalty kicks. Rob.
Worth exploring.
Okay. We have less than a minute. Olympic size ice mandatory in the NHL would be a far better flow to all games. Ooh.
Do you like, you've played on both. What did you prefer?
You get a workout.
Remember there's an arena in like Hespler that was Olympic size?
I know which one
you're
talking
about. And I loved it.
It's like when I go play at the York U Can Land and you play in the one pad, you're like, whoa, you have so much space. Okay, we have to take a break, but you can keep those coming. We'll try to cycle them through. We still have 2 guests on the other side, so we want to make sure we get to them on time. We will have a little chat with Jeff Bratt, Woodbine, and we got the Kings Plate coming up, and then we'll wrap things up with Ryan Paul, newest RBC director of this tournament. Lots to come. All right, we'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Big weekend. We were lucky enough to go to King's Plate last year and get ourselves all dolled up. You were wearing a suit. I had a fascinator on, and we got our gamble.
Why'd you say fascinator like that?
Because it's a fascinator. It's not, you know, a ball cap. I really went all out.
Yeah, you did.
It was a blast.
It was a blast. And I had a lot of fun.
I've been able to go to many, many iterations of the King's Plate and the Queen's Plate, and we have another one coming up this weekend, the 165th edition, North America's oldest continually run race. So we bring in Jeff Brett, Woodbine host, commentator, and handicapper to help us tee it all up. Jeff, how's it going?
It is going very well. Rumor has it that only one of you on the desk is coming this season. Why is that?
It is my...
It's a good question.
Okay, I'll tell you, it is my best friend's 30th birthday, and we are, I know, celebrating her not at the King's Plate, but I should have got a box, but we didn't make it happen. Sorry, Jeff. But next year I'll come very vibrant. And
keeping the tradition alive, and we'll be back next year even stronger.
Last year was your first year, so I mean, I've held down the fort.
And I'm keeping it alive this year.
I'm passing the torch just for 1 year to let Justin enjoy it. Okay, so what keeps people coming back every year? Because other than me, I have been at almost every single one since I've moved back to Toronto, and I love it. So for you, someone obviously that's been so heavily involved, like what is it about the King's or Queen's Plate that just keeps it coming?
I just think it's, you know, it's one of those sporting events that is on the calendar year in, year out. It's for horses born in Canada. This is the race that everybody wants to win. You know, you look back at it and it's 165 years continuously run. Like, this race survived everything. Wars, depression, COVID. We ran this race once with no fans in the stands. It was like the most awkward thing of all time. and we did it. And the game does go on. And, you know, it's still got a little bit of history to it. It's got that royal feel to it. You get a chance to get all dressed up and stuff like that. And hopefully you come to the races, you pick the winner, and you leave with a little bit more money in your pocket. But the game plan is just to go and have some fun. So somebody is going to be coming part of, obviously, sports history, and not only horse racing history, but sports history as well, coming up on the program on Saturday.
So we love uniquely Canadian things. And you mentioned one of the ways how this is uniquely Canadian. It's horses born in Canada. But what other ways makes this Canadian? What is it about the King's Plate that makes it uniquely Canadian? Because Canadians, we love that sort of thing.
Right. So we still, you know, we're part of the monarchy, so we still celebrate the Queen and King's Plate, and now it's known as the King's Plate as well. And, you know, they call it for the gallop for the guineas, and they actually do get guineas from the royal palace when they do win the race, the winning connections do. And, you know, I think that's cool. And, you know, it's interesting, too, that I find it funny that it's called the King's Plate, but yet it's a trophy that's given away. So I don't know exactly how that all came to be. But, you know, and I just think for whatever reason, you know, I love the story of the fact that it's a 1,000-pound animal and a 100-pound human, and they have to be in sync with one another at the same time, which I think is really kind of cool. I don't know if you guys have any pets or not, but, you know, it's that you kind of know what your dog is thinking, but you kind of know what the horse is thinking at the same time if you've ridden the horse on more than one occasion, too. And they all have personalities to them. And for just 2 minutes, you have to be spot on. Yeah, like, there's no margin for error. So it's the drama that I just love the storylines coming to a race like this.
And uniquely Canadian, I saw, and you can confirm for us, a Canadian Olympic gold medalist might be performing what was a breaking tradition that just became official here at Paris. So is it true that Phil Wizard, our Olympic Canadian gold medalist, will be there?
And rumor has it that Justin might get some moves out, too, I hear.
Justin,
you know.
Good for you, Justin.
That's unsubstantiated.
You said it on live TV, so it's real.
Yeah, but no, the Wizard's going to be here. I wonder if he can do some handicapping, too. Like, obviously, he can dance pretty good, but I wonder if he can pick some winners along the line. And you know what? We actually have all kinds of festivities taking place here. And we're going to have some concerts and stuff like that. But you guys love this. You look at the names of some of the races, too. We're celebrating some athletes as well because, Bedard in the race, who's named after Connor Bedard. And then you have Caitlin, her greatness, the one filly taking on the boys in here, and that one's named after Caitlin Clark. So
I'm picking her.
Those,
Yes, I want to pick her. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to pick the filly against the boys for sure. Yeah. And she ran last time out and was a very good second in her most recent race too. So the way that Caitlin Clark's year is gone, this horse will probably win by about 20 lengths. So
there you go. Or 22, perhaps.
That's Caitlin right. Clark.
Good one. Since I'm going, I got to know what to be doing there. Like, I love getting in line. I love hearing the chatter. I love hearing what people right before the race are betting, because that was my key to success last time out.
Did we have much success?
I did pretty well, actually. And I was just, you know, I was just tailing everybody else. But I did pretty well. But what else other than placing the bets do you have to do if you're on the grounds at the King's Plate?
Oh, that's, you got to eat, my friends. Food. It's all about the food. You got to have some beverages. You got to eat a little bit. Listen, we're not the jockeys. We don't have to worry about our weights. We get to go out there and have a good time and have a couple of drinks and have a good meal as well. So you got to do that. You got to look good, Justin. I imagine you're going to look great. Like, you're going to rock it. So I have no confidence that you won't do. I have a lot of confidence, rather, that you'll do
no
that.
Confidence in Justin. No confidence. I know what you meant there. I heard
sort of
you,
a Freudian
Jeff.
Slip there, yeah. But I have all the confidence in the world that you'll do that. And I think more than anything, this is the best thing too. And I tell this to everybody that comes, don't change your mind. If you go in and you say, okay, like, for example, I like Friendly Ghost as your horse or whatever. Don't change your mind. Say, I'm Friendly Ghost. Because sometimes I find I'll talk to people and I'll be like, oh, maybe I should change my mind and go to a different direction. And then I change my mind and what happens? So don't change your mind. That's the best piece of advice I can give you as well.
Okay. What makes a perfect King's Plate outfit? Whether you're going like the Fascinator like me or Justin, who's probably going to wear the same suit he wore last year, but, you know, it looked like, fine. Yeah, most likely. Like when you walk around the ground.
Guys, hopefully it still fits.
Yeah, I think it's easier for the guys, though. Like, we just put a nice suit, nice tie, stuff like that. The Fascinators are ultra important, for sure. Horse race-themed Fascinators get major props. I don't know if you've seen, like, I've seen literally, like, races on hats with, like, horses.
Oh, wow.
And I look at them, and I'm like, your shoulders and your neck must be killing you, because that seems like a lot of weight. But, so that's a plus as well. But the big thing, more than anything, guys, is you got to own it. That's the key. You got to have the swagger. You got to walk in like you own the joints, and then you'll have a good time. And you'll look the parts. Confidence.
It's way to be hard to come by. Okay, we're talking to Jeff Bratt, Woodbine host and commentator and handicapper. Now, the sports landscape has changed recently, right? We're talking about betting and gambling a little bit more, but I guess you're a veteran of this. Do you have people reached out to you? Like, how do we mix commentating and doing that part of the job with also dealing with the handicapping aspect that's always been tied to horse racing? Is there an art to that, Jeff?
There is. So the game has changed a lot, because it used to be in Canada, the only form of legalized gambling was going to the track. That was all you could do. And then, you know, we have casinos, and now you have sports betting and stuff like that. And now there's so many different bets you can make. Like, you can back just the horse to win. You can try and pick the top three. You can try and pick the top four. You can try to bet five races in a row. So it can be a little bit information overload for people that, you know, are kind of rookies to the game. So for those that are coming to the races for the first time for the King's Plate, I say just keep it simple. I'm all about that. So if you like a horse, just bet the horse to win, or you can bet the horse to finish in the top three, and that's called a show wager. So just keep it simple, because there's nothing worse than thinking you won and you go to cash your ticket and you didn't. So you just want to make sure that you keep it as simple as you possibly can. Cause I know you guys often talk about sports betting and stuff like that. So just the odds, we just do them differently. Like, we don't do plus 100 or plus 200. It's all about fractions, like 9-2 and 5-1 and stuff like that. So it's a little bit different how we do the odds as well.
I'm a big exacta guy. You got an exacta for us? You got something like that lined up? Like, what if you had to make a pick? I don't know if you're allowed to make picks, but.
Well, I am.
There you go. Okay. So
here's my pick. My give pick us a top in this three. Race is a horse by the name of Essex Serpent, who's got a really cool name. This one is going to be, I think, the second choice going post for Mark Cassie. So Mark Cassie is like kind of like the New York Yankees. Like, he's just he has all kinds of superstars. It's just good horse after good horse after good horse. So I like that one. But I'm going to give you my long shot in this race. So Essex Serpent's going to be my top pick at 30-1. This is I'm swinging for the fences with this one. I totally admit this. A horse by the name of Friendly Ghost. Love Can you it. Guess what his barn's nickname is?
Casper.
Casper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So they call him Casper. And he's getting better with each and every race. And his owner, Sue Leslie, used to have horses for like Curtis Joseph, Donnie Meehan. Used to train for a lot of NHL players throughout the year. So I think that Friendly Ghost is going to fly under the radar a little bit. But Essex Serpent, I think, is going to slither his way to victory in the King's Park.
I love that. Last one for you, Jeff. Like, I know a lot of people like going down to the track and looking, getting a look at the horses, getting close to them so they can see maybe how healthy are they, how vibrant they are. They're trying to get tips from how the horses look in person. If I'm going to see... I'm going to look at a horse dead in the eye. What am I looking for if I'm looking for a winner?
If they look right back at you, that's a sign. Uh-huh. But in all seriousness, you just want to make sure that, you know, they're calm, that they're not too docile. You want to make sure they got a little bit of a bounce to their step, that they're not – horses sweat too, so you want to make sure they're not sweating and everything. Okay. Just make sure they're cool and calm. If they're cool and calm, kind of like you will be when you're rocking that suit – that's probably a good sign they're going to run well.
All right.
Wow. You could be a winning
horse. Just look
horse
for the Justin out there.
Look for whoever looks like Justin Cuthbert, and you might win. Well, Jeff, this was a blast.
Not too sweaty, though. That's I'll be sweating.
Yeah, that, we golf a lot together, and Justin is sweaty, so it wouldn't be a good horse. Okay, Jeff, we appreciate you jumping on. This is fun. It's going to be a great day on Saturday. Best of luck. Enjoy the festivities. I'll see you next year, I promise, okay?
Okay, promise, because if not, I'm going to make you come out to one of my Tuesday night hockey games, because we're really struggling in the playoffs.
I'll gladly do that without a threat. If you need me, okay? I'll come anytime. Thanks, Jeff. All right, that's Jeff Bratt, Woodbine Host commentator and handicapper, and the 165th Kings plate on Saturday on Sportsnet and City TV. And the second and third legs of the Canadian Triple Crown will also be on Sportsnet and City TV, so you can catch all of that.
Calm. A lot of horse racing going on.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm a little
so we got
envious.
The Friendly Ghost and Essex Serpent. I'll put a wager down for you.
Please do. I'll give you some money. An IOU. Only okay. if
no
I
No
IOUs.
Win. I need it up front.
Okay. Yeah, but it's not going to happen then. Okay, today another big piece of news today. Ryan Paul jumping in to join us as well. He's the newest director of the RBC Canadian Open Tournament. Ryan, he's not here. Just kidding. He's coming.
We're good.
I'm just so excited to talk to Ryan.
Well, you're a big RBC Canadian Open guy. Like, you love it. Played in the Pro-Am this past year.
I truly do love it. Yep.
Going to TPC, and you're a big TPC Osprey Valley fan. So this is right in your wheelhouse.
I'm a big fan of just getting out.
You've been
out
waiting
on the
for
course.
This interview for a long time.
Yeah, I love getting out on
since
the course.
Since he was announced today as the new tournament director for the RBC Canadian Open.
It's going to be great news. Obviously, this is a big tournament. It's our big tournament. Going to be just kind of in our backyard, more in your backyard this year. TPC is a little bit closer to you.
It is a little closer to me, but we're splitting hairs a little bit.
Yeah, so that's going to be very fun. We're going to get to that in a second. But yeah, okay, so Essex Serpent, 30-1, Friendly Ghost, you're going to do that. Going to get that ready for Saturday at the King's Plate. Are you going to wear the same thing you wore last year?
Yeah, probably. I don't have much variety in that regard. But like that, it's not for me. It's not for the guys. I mean, the women with the fascinators, they get it all.
Did I tell you I made my fascinator?
You did multiple times.
Yeah.
When we were there. You're very proud of it.
No, the one I wore.
But that's what it's for. You know, the fascinators are the thing when it comes to
I did
the
like straight up
King's
arts
plate.
And crafts for mine.
How much did it cost you?
It was really cheap. That was the point. I made
How much
it
did
from
Michael's trip from, cost you.
No, strictly Dollarama girl. I got all of my items from there, and I made this fascinator. And the photo, I looked pretty good.
You should be able to bring it up by the end of the show. We did talk about your seamstress skills yesterday, so it's been a big week for that.
It is. I'm showing all of the talents I have. And the final one is wrapping up our show with Ryan Paul, a new tournament director with the RBC Canadian Open. Ryan, this has been a big day. Congratulations. Thanks for jumping on the show. How are you?
No, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so we saw that this kind of runs in the family. We're doing a little research. This is like maybe a childhood dream. Walk us through the family connection with being an RBC Canadian Open tournament director.
Yeah, well, it's pretty special. And growing up in Oakville and right by Glen Abbey, where the RBC Canadian Open's been for many years, and my dad being the tournament director for about 23 years, I believe. I've been coming to this event since I was since I was a little kid, and meeting all of the greats, Nick Prices and Tiger Woods. It's been truly remarkable, and now to have this role as tournament director for the RBC Canadian Open, it's great.
So if we go back through the footage, we'll see you like in the background as Adam Hadwin was tackled when Nick Taylor won. I'm assuming you were close to being inside the ropes for that moment.
Well, it's funny. It's funny you bring that one up. If you do look close, I'm one of the first ones running over to that security guard to let him know that.
Okay.
That it's clear. So, yeah, that was a moment I was there for, and really a special one. For all the years that I've been part of this event, to see a Canadian and Nick Taylor win our national open was truly remarkable.
I remember that moment like fondly, and now it's become part of the logo of the RBC Canadian Open, so it's a special one.
But the putter flip, not the tackle.
Yeah, but that would have been a cool like alt logo, like like the merch stand like down the road could be selling that. Don't take that one. Okay, but you spent the last 7 years, I believe, with Golf Canada as a tournament director for the CPKC Women's Open, so you've been heavily involved, and this has been an award-winning tournament. So like, how do you make award-winning tournaments? What goes into that? And what can you bring from the LPGA Tour over to the PGA?
Yeah, well, we got a great team at Golf Canada, and really that's what our kind of secret sauce is, and great sponsors. Certainly on the LPGA Tour side, CPKC has been an incredible title sponsor since 2014, and the 23 other sponsors that we've had that bring with us, and the communities we go to, and just this country is so golf crazed that it's unbelievable. And for that tournament, we could bring it around the country and have record-breaking crowds each and every year is truly special. So bringing that sauce over, and the RBC Canadian Open's had incredible growth over the last few years too, with our last tournament director, Brian Crawford, and the entire team, everyone at RBC is just truly invested in that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And in some ways it feels like I've been drafted onto a championship caliber team, because the event is just doing so well. And to put myself in a position like this is incredible.
Crawdaddy had the license plate on the golf cart. Are you going to get a personalized
amazing
license plate like your predecessor?
Well, I got the caddy bib behind me here on this side.
I saw that. It's nice.
Kind of work out something that way. But Crawford was great. And he taught me so much, even when we were working side by side, both as tournament directors at Golf Canada. So there's a lot that I've taken from him that I'll bring over.
So tell us a little bit about TPC Toronto at Osprey Valley. It looks different than when we were out there last summer nowadays. And
we
weren't able to get
it
out there this year.
Hoot.
A little more expensive. But it's beautiful. And like, if you look at the Instagram and you're looking at the clubhouse, and everything about it is just absolutely sparkling. And your first event, your first RBC Canadian Open will be there. Tell us a little bit about TPC Osprey Valley.
Yeah, that part's it's going to be special for me, for my first year as tournament director for the RBC Canadian Open, to be at TPC Toronto at Osprey Valley. And the first year that TPC Toronto was hosting our national open is going to be great. And that course is unbelievable. It is so beautiful. The clubhouse that they've just built it's picturesque. It's really built for a national open, and there's so much room around to build our grandstands, our hospitality, all of our fan villages, and the concerts that we do on the golf course. There's really no shortage of room to do so many great things. And I think once everyone gets up there, and if you've been before, you know all about it. If you haven't been and you see it for the first time, you're going to see why we've chosen TPC Toronto. It's the perfect venue for us.
Who's going to be performing?
That we're gonna share that.
I just saw Avril Lavigne a couple days ago, and she's a great Canadian legend. I bet she'd want to perform. Just thought she did really well on Monday night at Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had so many great performances in that, and keeping this concert series going is something that's important to us. So, we're gonna have some great
acts.
It'll remain top secret for now. We're talking to Ryan Paul, new tournament director for the RBC Canadian Open. So a new voice here, but it feels like the same challenges always face this event, right? Like the placement in the PGA Tour schedule seems to be the thing that we always go back to. And there were changes to the PGA schedule announced yesterday. Is it better set up this year or this upcoming year than it has been? Or is it still, trying to find and trying to optimize its position on the PGA calendar?
No, it's a great question. I think we really like the date that that we have. Now I've been around this tournament since 2007, so I can tell you all about the dates in the past when we've been in July right after the British Open and the challenges that we faced with that one. But I think from the growth that you've seen or that we've had since 2019 up until now, and really in this new date or this window of early June has been great for us, and really being the official kickoff to summer, not competing in the dates that we had in July with cottage weekends and just other things going on, has been great. And then really from a player standpoint, where you have Memorial in Ohio and then being right before the U.S. Open, has seen benefits from us. You know, one year we had Justin Thomas when he wanted to come play an event right before the U.S. Open as a bit of a warm-up and just to kind of fine-tune the game, came in. So it works for us, and I think we're excited to be right before the U.S. Open again.
I just double-checked my schedule, and I am free for the Pro-Am again this year. So just letting you know, I've already told our director here that I will take that day off. No problem. I'm ready to play.
I think that's below the pay grade here, Ryan.
Well, he can pass it along to those that need to know.
Like, well below.
I'm ready to defend my not title. I had a lot of fun. I got to play this year in the Pro-Am. It was a blast. So Justin's also king golf.
No.
I almost said a good golfer, and then you're going to lie to Ryan.
Let's not talk about my golf game and ask you one more important question. The RBC Canadian Open feels like, you mentioned it, you've been around there since 07. It feels like an event that is gaining momentum. Does it feel that way for you?
Absolutely. It's really turned itself into more than just a golf tournament. That's what it kind of, that was the DNA back in 2007 and in those early years. And now it's all about a festival and for outdoor sports enthusiasts and just people who want to get outside. That the golf is amazing and it's getting better and better. Our Canadians are competing globally now in a world where they have a chance to win week in and week out, and they have been winning week in, week out. So they're very excited to see, we have Rory McIlroy's and those coming, that the golf is just incredible. But then on top of that, the food scene that we have, all of our fan activities and our fan village is award-winning. The concerts on top of that, it's really, there's something for everyone, which is what's great about our event.
All right, well, all joking aside, we are excited to get up there to see it, whether as media or spectators or participants. And congrats again on today. It's been a big one, a special one for you, and lots of work ahead. So enjoy it, and enjoy the rest of golf season. I know there's still some more for us, so just get out there when you can.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Ryan Paul, so the new tournament director for RBC Canadian Open. Feeling Crawdaddy shoes. I love the Crawdaddy
big
drop.
Big shoes for the Crawdaddy.
He called him Crawford, so. I guess it's different.
Guess we're tighter with Crawdaddy.
we know Crawdaddy
somehow
better.
I doubt that.
But yeah, it's going to be great. June 3rd to 8th, 2025. That's crazy to say out loud.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should we do some bets?
Let's do some bets. So my bet has to do with the enthusiasm that I feel around the, believe it or not, Toronto Raptors.
Okay, so big day for them too.
Big day for them. They've released their schedule.
You noticed something in the schedule release.
What about it? The
theme to the graphics.
The graphics are really cool if you look on their Instagram. Each one of the, on the slide across on Instagram, has Vince Carter dunking on the opponent of the team that they are playing. So if it's like the Bucks, it's him dunking on, anyway, you can get it. Anyway, I'm feeling a little crazy because I'm believing in the Toronto Raptors that this purple 30th anniversary thing is going to make something. They're going to win more than five more games than they did last year. So this is what I'm betting. Raptors over 30 and a half wins, okay?
Okay.
Let's just believe the Raptors can win 31 games. It's their 30th anniversary. I think there'll be a bit more excitement. They've got some new faces, and they got purple jerseys. So believe in something. 30 wins.
And they're celebrating Vince Carter
going to be something different.
So if Vince Carter's
it's
being celebrated,
it's such a sad pick. 30 wins.
But... No, I mean, betting on the Raptors team or win total over used to be like the can't miss in
sports
betting.
And last
year was
a bad year.
But they've taken a little
worse?
Bit of a dip back.
No.
But 30 is such a low number. 30 and a half is a really low number.
Plus money, too.
And they just locked up a core.
I am into it right now. With.
I also think it's going to be over 30 and a half wins. You're getting plus money on the over.
Let's do it. Okay.
Which is interesting. One NFL preseason game tonight, Eagles visiting the Patriots. Mm-hmm. The best quarterback in the game is Kenny Pickett, which tells you something about the quality of the game.
Oh, I thought you meant in the game in the game of football.
No.
I was like,
in the
what?
Game tonight should be Kenny Pickett. And if the Eagles have the best quarterback, yes, Kenny Pickett is a member of the Philadelphia Eagles going from one Pennsylvania team to the next. I'm just going to ride with the quarterback that's best in the game and take the points plus three. Eagles visiting Foxborough. Also a rematch today in Cincinnati. Remember when Felix upset Casper Ruud?
I do remember that.
This is playing into the line. Casper Ruud is, I mean, the higher ranked player, at least this year, and is plus 130 against Felix in Cincinnati.
Okay.
Feel like a little revenge on the friendly ghost's mind? Casper Ruud.
Friendly ghost. We're really into the friendly ghost.
So plus 130, Casper Ruud. That's not an anti-Felix play. It's just...
Okay. A revenge play.
A revenge play.
So just to reiterate, Jeff Bratt loved Essex Serpent, but loved the 30-1 odds on friendly ghost. So you're going to bet that for me on Saturday. I'm off tomorrow, so I'll let you know.
Okay.
How the birthday party
goes. You can hand me the money before you leave tonight.
I have no money. Have a nice night, everyone. Happy Baby Friday. See you tomorrow. You'll be with Rubinoff.